Good evening, everyone, wherever you are in this cold winter's evening. My name is Kaya Sithole, and I'll be the host of this space over the next hour. It is brought to you by the Kagiso Trust. And on this particular week, where we celebrate the 105-year anniversary of the birth of Nelson Mandela, we thought it would be important to have a conversation around active citizenship, which has become synonymous with Nelson Mandela's legacy. The Kagiso Trust, obviously, is an important institution whose history dates back to the middle of the 80s. And since then, they've done a lot of work in the activity and citizenship space. And we thought this would be a point of reflection and also perhaps look at some of the current work that the Trust is currently doing in order to drive that message that we all can contribute towards the better capacitation of the country that we all love so much. Obviously, we'd like to hear from you. We'd like and welcome your contributions. So you can always just put your questions through to the Kagiso Trust Twitter account. We'll track them there on the TL. And also later on, you'll have an opportunity to put your hand up and tell us what you think needs to be done or what it is that perhaps you are doing in your own space in order to drive active citizenship. The Kagiso Trust has also adopted what I refer to as a rather radical approach to managing these relationships and cultivating these relationships between different social stakeholders that we are calling hashtag radical collaboration. But before we go into the details of what exactly is happening, I'd like to introduce to you somebody who understands these things much better than I do, and that is Mandi Satselane from the Kagiso Trust, is going to give us a brief introduction onto what the work of the Kagiso Trust has been in recent years. Mandisa, I hope you're already here. If you can unmute yourself.
Yes, Kaya. Am I audible?
Yes, you are. Please go ahead, Mandisa.
Okay. Thank you, Kaya, for that beautiful introduction. And yes, I think I'm just going to give you and everyone here a brief overview of who Kagiso Trust is. As you have said earlier, Kagiso Trust was established in 1985 as an anti-apartheid movement to empower black communities to stand up against the injustices of apartheid. Okay, we're quite proud, especially at the fact that now we are celebrating Mandela Month, that we're also founded by the visionaries and courageous leaders such as Dr. Beyers Naudé, Dr. Max Coleman, and Bishop Tutu, amongst others. And we are still sticking to that vision of 1985 of achieving a prosperous, peaceful, equitable, and just society. So as this is the vision of Kagiso Trust, we are still very dedicated to ensuring that we empower rural and marginalized communities. That's our major focus. But one of our notable achievements is in education, especially in the Free State. Through our education intervention in the Free State, we have witnessed remarkable results, not only in ensuring that we receive great matric results, but also in empowering our communities, in eradicating poverty by investing in education, as well as providing the resources, necessary resources. However, our work has extended far beyond education. In the previous years, we have expanded our programs to include socioeconomic development with a key focus on agriculture and property. And by supporting these particular untransformed sectors, our aim is to ensure that we foster sustainable economic growth, create employment opportunities, and uplift communities. And another aspect of our work, which is basically why we are here today, is in local governance, where we strive to tackle complex issues associated with the governance of local municipalities. The discussions today will expand on what are these issues associated with governance of local municipalities. But in local governance, we strengthen civil society relationship between local government and community. So we are here today because we have seen what we have achieved through our partnership with the Makana Municipality in the Eastern Cape, where communities, business, and local government can work together to bring about positive change. And I think it's not really what we can now start seeing the results in Makana, but we are really beginning to see the positive change. And it is for this reason, Kaya, that we thought if we engage as a nation, we can make a significant difference in the lives of individuals and communities. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that brief overview, Mandesa. And I think obviously for a lot of us that probably were not aware of just how deep and how strong Kagiso Trust's connections are with the civil sector, and also trying to make intervention at various levels of South African society, is it was important for us to sort of have that throwback and understanding the organization has indeed been in this particular space even before the 1994 change, which obviously enabled us to sort of understand how these things work a bit better. I think also just to, a springboard on that particular introduction, this idea of active citizenship is something that probably transcends organizations and should bind us all of us together in our different spheres. Zuyiswa, you are from the Public Service and Accountability Monitor at Rhodes University, and of course you do a lot of work in the civil society space. I know some of the specific organizations that you support, but I'm quite curious to find out from you, I mean, this idea of active citizenship, this idea of citizens participating in governance, how important is it and how exactly do we embed it into the various practices that we see across different sectors of society? Zuyiswa, are you there? Okay, we are trying to get hold of Zuyiswa to get it to be able to speak up. Twitter Spaces is acting.
Sorry about that.
Twitter Spaces that you want. But Zuyiswa will obviously be giving us some insights onto the work that she has seen in her particular space. Zuyiswa, are you there?
Yes, hi, Kai. I'm not sure. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now. Please go ahead.
Great, super. Literally just enabled the speaker function, so it's been giving me bad times. Yeah, Kai, I might have missed part of your question while I was frantically trying to connect as a speaker. Twitter Space wasn't being kind. But I think, one thing to start off on around how we define active citizenship. I think there are so many different ways to define it. There are so many different ways to be an active citizen, to be an active resident. And in the context of Makanda, certainly we've seen that this, there's a wide range, starting from, volunteerism, and I think that's supported in many ways, to a lot of what Kagiso Trust, for instance, has been intervening in, which is about capacitating young people, residents and others, including, municipal officials, in fact, to better understand the ways in which the entry points, we often refer to them in our work as entry points when it comes to citizenship and understanding what our potential role and what our different sets of agencies are. And so maybe just to touch a little bit on some of those different types of citizenships and actions, we've seen quite exciting developments here in Makanda around collaborations, and I think closer working with, on the one hand, one another as civic actors, residents, people interested in driving change at at the local government space and the municipal space, and then on the other hand, exciting developments in learning how to better engage, more strongly engage with an accountability angle, duty bearers, which is, I know, a really important area of work as well that Kagiso Trust and our own organization at the Public Service Accountability Monitor have really prioritized. I think, Kaya, before I get carried away with that, and also just noting, as I say, I definitely would have missed bits of your question, I'd like to just start off on that and framing it in that regard, and maybe perhaps also to share some reflections from a project we've been working on called Action for Accountability, which seeks to really push this envelope of what is it that we can do and we use the word regular, there are not many useful words, but really just as someone who lives in a particular place, who calls a particular place home, what is it that you can do to help with improving service delivery, to contribute to increased accountability, and down the line, potentially live in the kind of place we want to live in with the kind of leadership we want to be led by. So I'll share some of that, but just to say really the partnerships that we've had across the municipality, including with Kagiso Trust, for instance, as a really important agent, a really important player in our space, have been really uplifting. There's a lot more to be done. There's a lot of concrete examples that I'm happy to share in our conversation.
No, thank you very much for that, Zogiswa. And I think obviously we will come back to you and sort of get greater insights onto particularly what you've seen in the case study of Makanda. But before we get there, I'd like to sort of bring into the conversation Paul Smith. Paul Smith is the executive head of the Kagiso Trust local government support pillar at the K team. And I think from your perspective, Paul, I'm sort of quite keen to find that.
Exactly. What was it that the Kagiso Trust had in mind when they said,
look, we'd like to add this as one of the pillars of the work that we do, and what exactly is it that has then happened in that particular time frame in order for us to get to a stage where we can say, look, the Kagiso Trust does some important work in that particular space?
Yeah, thank you, Kaya. It's been an interesting journey because for many years, Kagiso Trust has been focused on trying to support municipalities to produce better outcomes for communities. And it was just a while ago when once we were doing a revenue management project that we were requested to just reiterate what we were doing so that we could bring greater change in marginalized communities. And so we chose Makanda as the municipality that we'd like to test this approach in. And when arriving on site, we really found an interesting scenario. Apart from the fact that the municipality was struggling at the stage, we found that civil society and community in general was also very polarized. Lots of very good initiatives going on, but very insular in their approaches. And so what we decided to do is focus on creating an enabling environment. So be a little less issues focused, and create an environment that would enable the creative ideation and solutions for any issues at a local level. And so we embarked on a journey of stakeholder engagement and started talking to people about the possibility of getting together around the table, burying the hatchet, and starting to talk about some local problems. The Makanda case study is not perfect. We understand that. But it does take time for people to adjust and adopt new behavior. But with all the partners being committed to a common cause, which is improvement of the local town and the municipality, it's become a bit better. And slowly we're seeing green shoots in terms of what can be done because people are working together. But we must also understand that much of our problem is not only municipalities that are struggling financially, struggling to perform, but it's also civil society and communities that are not really cohesive and with a common purpose. So we all need to play our role, and we need to choose whether we want to be part of a solution or part of the problem. And I think if civil society is going to be involved in changing the outcomes for communities, we need to be part of the solution, and that means we need to become more system orientated and less egocentric about our approaches. And whilst we entered into the Makanda space, we found that the additional problem in us, and I think Marlene can probably elaborate this on this a bit more, but we found that people saw many of the issues as from a superficial perspective. And so giving an opportunity for people to deep dive and understand problems in a bit more detail was really important. It allowed people to connect differently and gain a new purpose about how to approach problems. And so that became one element of our model that we've produced. The next element of the model is to empower the municipality to be a better collaboration partner. It's not easy to collaborate with someone that doesn't do what they're supposed to do or is less capable of doing what they're supposed to do or just not doing anything. And so the municipality has to step up to the plate as well as empowering communities and helping communities organize themselves in a cohesive way, structure themselves properly to hold meaningful engagement with the municipality. And then the last stage of the model really is about enabling all the stakeholders to put their hands together and make a difference and create the future they desire in their small towns. But it is up to the people locally. And in Makana, there's a couple of green shoots examples of what can really be achieved through collaboration. And one of those is the project implemented by the National Arts Festival at the moment in conjunction with the municipality and other stakeholders, raise funds from a national fund and hiring many people locally that are unemployed to clean up the town, fill potholes, and do some other maintenance work around that makes a difference to everybody's life.
Thank you for that call. I definitely am not there to want to still interrogate, so we'll definitely come back to you. But you did raise a very important concept of the insular active citizenry, something that a lot of us are probably not familiar with. And I think somebody who's done enough work across the ecosystem to know exactly what all these terms mean and how we can sort of really synthesize them is Marlene Ogawa, who is the country director for Synergies in South Africa. Marlene, Paul mentions this idea of active citizenry and the move from insular active citizenry to something much better. Talk us through what that means and how it has manifested, particularly in the Makana case study.
Yeah, thanks, Kaya. Hi, everyone. Just an honor to be part of this and speak about this because it's such an important time in our country. Our lessons have been across different sectors, and we work cross and multi-sectorally. We call it bridging leadership, and it is about building relationships and bridging out the differences and connecting, listening to each other, and sensing deeply into the issues so that we can solve the problems collaboratively. So we're very much about collaboration and holding each other accountable in ways that builds us, that is open and honest, where we confront the issues and address them as a collective. So quite a bit of what we've learned is around how people connect to create a sense of belonging and sense of part of the solutions and part of solving for. We see with municipalities that the individuals who work in the municipalities are part of the system, right? But they are individuals who make up that system. And so how do we show up as individuals in this collective to address some of the issues? So when we speak about insular, we also invite in communities to not only look at the issues that they are affected by and impacted by, but to solve challenges for the larger community. So how do we see and sense into different perspectives? How do we see eye to eye? And how do we see each other as human so that we can show up with compassion for each other? I think the processes that we follow also creates ownership for the issues. And through those relationships of trust, also to trust each other that we solve the problems, not only because it's our problem, but it's a collective problem. I think that is the invitation in. And how do we build social capital? So social capital across the municipality and municipal officials based on the work they have to do, but also with business, with civil society organizations, individual leaders, connectors, activators in communities, and how do we pull them together to be active and solve and figure issues out together. We are at a place where there's a little bit of indifference, numbness, insensitivity as well towards each other and towards the issues. And how do we reactivate ourselves into showing up for each other and caring? And so some of the work that we also do and invite leaders in and leaders across the spectra is really around what's your work that you have to do to understand the issues. I saw that Adrian mentioned youth and how do youth contribute? What's the gifts and talents of youth and how can youth contribute? And how do we create space? So inclusion into those spaces is also a big part of active citizenship and to break away from this insular approach to addressing issues, but as a collective with collective purpose, collective voice, collective action towards collective ownership of the issues. And that ensures that
over time, those issues are owned by and solved together, and it creates sustainability. It creates the gift of relationship and diverse relationships, and it creates the gift of us all have a sense of belonging to the communities where we live. Thanks.
Marlene, one of the questions that I was thinking about earlier on is, you know, for a lot of citizens, the state in its multiple forms, whether it's local government, whether it's national or provincial government, is supposed to be able to deliver on particular expectations, whether it's social services or anything of that nature. And of course, when the state fails to deliver, then it is within this gap where the question of active citizenship becomes even more amplified. In the current iteration, do we see that a lot of the active citizenship that we see across the country is born out of a sense of frustration with the state failing to keep up, or is it simply citizens who would simply say, well, actually, we still think that more can be done to assist society, regardless of what government does or doesn't do?
Yeah, I think what we've seen in terms of active citizenship, it's been interesting because active citizenship in Makana, for example, part of it has been taking the municipality to court or rallying people for protests and everyone mobilizing and protesting. The truth of the matter is neither have really worked to impact shifts in terms of service delivery and those. What has been working and what we see is when with the municipality, with business, with civil society, with the larger community, if there's the sense of collaboration that's been built. We have challenges. How do we solve it together? The courts, a court order hasn't helped at putting municipalities under administration. Under administration has not necessarily helped. What we see shifting the system is how individuals' attitudes change towards each other in terms of their relationships, but also towards what needs to be done to make the place where I live a better place to be. And that is what we see emerging across different system sectors, even institutions as well, where people begin to connect personally and professionally to their higher purpose in terms of why am I there, what am I doing there every day, and how can I solve the problems based on the calling, based on my work, based on my accountability and the responsibilities that I actually do have to deliver on. So it's shifting, I will say, Kaya, it's shifting of the heart as well. And not only officials, but community as well. Thanks.
Yeah. Paul, I imagine that a lot of active citizens that we meet in different communities are people who wake up and say, look, I think I can make a difference here. They start and initiate or champion a project, and then they go with it, only to discover that perhaps further down the road or maybe in a block away, somebody else has got the same idea, but there's never been a point of coordination. And of course, government itself, because it doesn't really lead these processes, isn't going to create those spaces of co-creation and collaboration. From the experience that you've seen on the ground, how do these individual active citizens who are in different corners of a particular community eventually come together and say, well, actually, let us pull together our resources in order to achieve better outcomes? Or is it still a place where there's a lot of work that needs to be done?
No, thanks, Kai. There is a lot of work to be done on this, and the scenario you painted there is probably applicable to most municipalities in South Africa. We're working in a couple of other municipalities at the moment, and people are really desperate to try and find ways to make a difference. We also are sort of founders of the TAN Action Net Group, co-founders of the TAN Action Net Group with a group of other small town activists. And there's 300 people on that group all trying to make a difference in their town. But I think at the end of the day, we need to help communities structure themselves better. We need to help them come together and start dialogues around how to better represent themselves. In essence, what we're really trying to do is strengthen the local governance framework, which includes the municipality and local stakeholders. And that local governance framework has got a few things that it needs to try and do. It needs to try and promote community-centric development, and it needs to try and support the municipality to be a better service delivery mechanism. Because a lot of our our municipalities are struggling at the moment financially. They've got a skills deficit, and we have to help these municipalities find their way out of this hole. And that can only happen if communities participate. But I think the starting point for communities is really to start the process. You know, we have also found that there's a lot of people in communities and in the municipal environment that don't like working in structured environments. They prefer to work in environments of chaos that allows them to do what they feel like doing and manipulate communities to do what they don't necessarily want to do or is not beneficial for the community. So we urge communities to start finding early adopters of collaboration, and that means we don't defend positions, we don't represent narrow constituencies, but we look for the solutions that for the greater good, and then start the ball rolling. And what we found is that when you do this and you get a couple of influential stakeholders on board, the snowball starts rolling and getting bigger. And as you get more success, so you find that more people are converted into joining this civic type coalition. And the civic type coalition also plays two roles. It can also support development and support the municipality, but it also increases the levels of accountability for everybody, both the municipality and community, because we as communities also have to realize that we have a responsibility to make sure that our towns and cities and municipalities work. It's not only the job of the municipal officials to do that, and then we can also hold municipal officials accountable. And again, if we've got a number of scenarios that can take place. The best case scenario is when you've got tremendous political will to adopt change and transform, and you've got significant stakeholder coalitions or collaboration. That is the best case scenario. But most of our municipalities, in a case where we're lacking a bit of political will and we're not socially organized, and we have to start building stakeholder capacity throughout the country, both within our communities and within our municipalities, to have a different outlook. Because what we've done over the last several years hasn't worked. And it's not going to work, it's not likely to work. So we need to, and business and local communities also needs to adopt a slight change in attitude. You know, it's no longer being about the business on its own, it's insular. I mean, I'll tell you a story. I went to a restaurant in Makana, and the restaurant owner said to me, despite the municipality's dysfunctionality, I've got a borehole, I've got solar, I've got gas in the stove, and at the moment, I've got patrons. And I just said to the restaurant owner, you know, if you don't start thinking about the bigger picture, you're going to find you have this wonderful restaurant without patrons and an unsuccessful business. And I think many of our small town businesses are starting to feel the pinch and starting to move out. But I think when we start dealing with municipalities and transforming municipalities, we must think of leadership transformation and creating more purposeful institutions. Because if we can't achieve that, it doesn't matter what capacity building we do, it's not really going to make a difference. Because our municipalities are capacitated. There are people there that can do a job. And what we need to do is just repurpose those institutions to make sure that people, when people wake up in the morning, they realize the consequences of non-delivery for their local communities, which are their friends and families. And that's really important. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. If you just joined us, we are talking about active citizenship. The Kagiso Trust has convened this important conversation in light of the fact that this week we not only were celebrating the 105-year anniversary of the birth of Nelson Mandela, but also active citizenship is such an important part of what we do and how we do it. So, guess what? I have a bit of an anxiety here in that when we speak about citizens having to essentially take up arms and do whatever is needed in order to address local issues, some might argue that we are shifting the burden of governance to the unelected unelected. When we do elect officials, when we do vote and then we put people in powers or positions of authority for them to do all of these things, how do we then ensure that the accountability that is necessary in order for them to do the work and for us to sort of evaluate it objectively, those accountability instruments and mechanisms are used? What do we see on the ground? Do people simply not know how to hold officials accountable?
No, that's a really, really good question, Kaya. And I think maybe as a start, one really important aspect of our constitution is precisely that it does assign citizens, the responsibilities and the space to engage in those ways. So as civic actors, as, citizens, we have, the rights and responsibilities in the context of a participatory democracy. But absolutely, this notion of taking up arms and fighting back should never certainly be one that is about doing the job for and taking over the roles of those who are elected and appointed to do precisely what they're supposed to. And so what does that mean? It means, for instance, that rather than doing for, we say, okay, how do we better understand, how do we better equip ourselves to, what, on the one hand, understand what should be happening? And I think we should be very mindful that things like the IDP, things like the municipal budget, and many other related aspects of governance at the municipal level, at the local government level, are not without their complexities. I don't think any of us on this call, sorry, that's a puppy, any of us on this call can for 1 minute pretend that it is easy to engage with, with any budgets, let alone municipal budgets. And so a good stepping stone, a starting point is saying, to what extent is it feasible for us as residents to actually meaningfully understand, those tools, understand what should be happening in order to exact accountability, in order that if I'm sitting as an observer in a council meeting, it's not for me to do. It is for me to say, right, okay, something here isn't adding up. Something isn't making sense. The IDP says one thing and another thing is happening. If I'm, able to access information about service level agreements, for instance, on a particular tender in a context in my municipality, and I'm able to make sense of what is being said, make sense of what the expectations are, to what extent can I sit and observe and say, right, okay, in the bid adjudication meeting, for instance, this was said, and that doesn't make sense. And do I understand that, I can hold Councillor X, or I can hold municipal official SX in this unit accountable or ask these questions in these ways. I can submit this petition. I can have residents in this area, for instance. So today we were at a town hall meeting and a really, really, for me, quite an eye-opening space. There was an input from the IDP manager of Makana, who I felt, I think, it was really important to hear from that perspective, to say, right, it is important for people to understand what the IDP is and understand its value. And on the other hand, people to say it's also important for people, for municipal officials and, councillors to be in this space that we can ask them questions. So, Kaya, I think a big aspect of it is that if on the one hand we don't even know what those accountability mechanisms are, there is no way that we can make use of them or even strengthen them. So a big part of some of our work in the context of this accountability, Action for Accountability project, is to say, do we understand what should be happening? And yes, and I think Paul's absolutely right. People do thrive. Some do thrive in context of chaos, and it does work better if people don't understand, if there's opacity in documents, if there's no access to information, if people don't even know what they're entitled to receive, to know, to what should be published, should the IDP be, IDP document be made available in hard copy? If I go to the town, city hall, what can I ask for? What is within my rights to ask to see? If none of us know any of that, there certainly is a massive gap, let alone in understanding what is happening and isn't happening. So I think a sort of base starting point, and not just here, it's definitely not just a Makana problem. We've also, some of our work is based, focuses on, three wards in the city of Johannesburg, Lanesia, Mondio, and Fynetown in collaboration with other partners. And some of what we're seeing there as well is that this access to information and people understanding processes and this point of entry points is significantly lacking. And so, yes, it does work in officials or some officials and some politicians, advantage if we ourselves are not, aware of what the entry points, if we're not aware of what accountability mechanisms exist, if we're not even aware, for instance, that at what point in the municipal calendar are we, are officials obliged to engage us? In what ways, and what documents, you know, should be available? So certainly I think that, that risk of, you know, subsuming the responsibilities of appointed leaders, is not something that we would ever advocate for. But really it is about, on the one hand, when we talk about active citizenship, we also need to be quite open to the fact that we need to capacitate ourselves. So part of fighting back is really about how do we educate ourselves? How do we build our collective capacities to engage? You know, we recently were hearing about, you know, the levels of literacy. And again, I haven't read this report, so I don't know the extent of its validity and so on. But, you know, really scary levels of literacy or illiteracy. Oh. Questionable literacy in terms of some of our ward councillors. And I'd say that that's also part of a broader conversation. And I know that Kahiso Trust have also made interventions to ensure, on the one hand, capacity building and strengthening of the governance systems from that end. And we have done similar work in the past. But at the core of it right now is about saying, what does it mean for us to engage? What are the tools we need? And it certainly is not about us all being civic actors, civil society organizations, Rhodes University professors. That certainly is not it. But it is about what does it mean for residents to be empowered to ask the right questions. And that's what our social accountability lens says, is how do we ask the right questions in order to push the right accountability buttons? But also then, when that fails, we need to say, right, what is the next step? And if we don't understand the social accountability system or the, you know, whether it's public finance management or whatever it may be, we will come back to the same spot time and time again. And I think it links a bit to what Paul was saying as well. And maybe, yeah, Kaya, just one last aspect of that. I think there is also, I think, great value in really being circumspect in when we take it upon ourselves to fill in the potholes, we take it upon ourselves to do the things that the municipality is failing to do. There is, yes, the volunteerism aspect, but I think we also need to be, as residents, as civic actors, be quite circumspect about at what point am I doing councillor or rather official parks and manager X's job. And I think that's maybe another conversation, but I appreciate your question.
All right. Thank you very much, Zugiswa. We're going to actually add a couple of other participants here. We're going to go to Inkomo. What a name. Inkomo, are you there?
Hi, Inkomo. Thank you for...
Yes, please ask your question, sir.
Yeah. I hope I'm audible. Yeah.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I've been...
Go ahead.
Yes, I've been listening for quite some time, but I don't seem to find the way to be active as a citizen, right? I've got a few things just to mention. My first point of departure here, it will be, how do I become active when there is a load shedding for a week? How do I enforce that to be active as a citizen? How do I intervene in an overcrowding hospital where I will have to take my mother there to the hospital and then she does not get health service there? I have to come back and take her to the private hospital. Remember, she is not even on my medical aid. I've got my own children there. So I pay tax for her to get service from the public hospital. So now how do I become an active citizen on those just two issues? I'm not going to mention others.
All right. No, thank you very much for that. We also have Andre. Andre, are you on? If you can speak, please.
Good evening, Kaya.
Yes, Andre, go ahead. We can hear you.
So I think the previous question is so apt to what I wanted to say. Citizens don't know how to engage. And I ask the question, why? So I grew up in a South Africa where the call to act was the pre-apartheid years. So we were called to act. It was in the streets, in the street committees, in the churches, in the school, in the community hall. It was all over. The call to act, despite the government. actually in opposition to the government, was our invitation. And I ask the question now, specifically of Paul and the Kagiso Trust guys, because I think they're doing great work, but I'm trying to measure the impact and the sustainability and exponential growth of the work that they're doing. Paul, here's my question. The soul of this nation has been seriously, seriously downgraded over the last few years. And with the guy, when I see the happening at the moral regeneration or restoration movement, and many other players such as yourselves, how do we start to get the morals, the dignity that we mentioned in the Constitution, to bear so that people can hear the call of their own dignity, so that the economic and cultural evolution that happens in the different parts of the country are no longer government-led. Like back in the days when I was. How do we get the citizen to start this regeneration of soul, reclaiming their dignity, so that poverty, unemployment, crime, and the big one that we haven't as yet talked about in this country, inequality and equity, becomes the responsibility of citizens. Hopefully my question is clear.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Andre. And also we did get a question from Adrian who says, how do we rebuild trust? Citizens might be keen to participate, but the past has left a bad taste in their efforts. And I think clearly the sentiments here are really based on what we've all seen as our own experiences in the different communities where we've been. Marine, I'd like to come to you first. I mean, as Andre said, the call to act was universal and unifying in the past. And then obviously we got a government that we wanted, and perhaps some people thought our problems had been fixed, and yet here we are.
Yeah, thanks, Kaya, and great questions. I feel like we keep coming back to the same issues, and I believe that we're solving for X in terms of service delivery and all of those, how we engage with government and local government, municipality. But the other gift of the processes are also building relationship within our communities. The truth of the matter is we are still segregated. We still see different perspectives, either based on race or context, a privilege or not. And what we invite people into and part of the process is to see different perspectives and shift. And that is directly linked to building trust and rebuilding trust. If we honor each other's stories, if we build the respect that we need to have for each other across our diversities, and it might sound cliche, but that is what is needed in South Africa. And some of the work that we, the deep, deep painful work that we have had to do, we have not done. And that is fundamentally that when we see this conflict and tension, we split either across racial lines and true sides or context lines or party lines, and that is what needs to shift. And so part of building trust is about building relationships. And if we build those relationships across these diversities, then we can begin to shift, hold each other accountable, speak our truth, create space for each other to understand our lived experiences, because that is still part of the issue, that there's still denial in terms of how we live, where we live, and who have and who don't. And that is also part of addressing the inequalities. We live in two different worlds in this country, more often than not. It also requires a lot of patience. So relationship capital and patience capital is part of building and rebuilding. And then trust capital, which is part of social capital. Because once we have the trusting relationships, we can go miles together and move forward. So we have to go a little bit slow. And I just want to also speak about the relationship and the role of municipalities is really to create an enabling environment for citizens to be active. And yes, they have a particular role, but we kind of see a few extremes. And as Paul said, with the different scenarios, what we find that in some cases where there's no political will and action, There's a high level of community coalition, but it's also not a healthy model. It is not sustainable. So across, there needs to be the political will and the civil coalition and energy and commitment to work together. And that collaboration, both deeply within the municipality and across the departments, but also within the communities and across the different spectra of players in the community, as well as the bridging that needs to happen between the community. And business have, we see with local economic development and business fora, how that can often happen. And if it's done right, it's the beginnings of shifting the system and shifting the and building the bridge to impact what's happening. And the gift of working with community is the sustainability thereof as well, and the ownership.
Yeah.
Because politicians often come and go, officials come and go, but community members stay, and that creates part of the sustainability of the initiatives over the years. Thanks.
Thanks for that, Marlene. Paul, I mean, the question around how the Kagiso Trust essentially assesses its own impact is a critically important one. But I'm also quite curious for you to tell us exactly, when the Kagiso Trust talks about radical collaboration, what exactly does that translate to in relation to communities where there may be a few activists with intentions but without access to resources or even the collaborative platforms that are necessary to get us there? So if you can just address those two questions of how that So Trust deals with the question of impact, and also more importantly, what does radical collaboration mean in this context?
Yeah, I think that the two questions we took were really pertinent and real. We do live in tough times, and it's during these tough times that people become islands and they isolate themselves and start protecting their own assets and go into cocoons and to try and hustle their way through these tough times, and it's really difficult. And so, and then Andre raised a very interesting perspective of common purpose. And I think that's exactly where we're trying to go, Andre. We have to give people and communities and municipalities an opportunity to regain that common purpose, because you saw and you reiterated what common purpose can actually achieve. And that was common purpose by the incumbent politicians as well as communities that were challenging the apartheid system at the time. And you saw that we all know what happened. So in essence, what we're really trying to solve for here is we're trying to solve a people problem. A people problem both at institutional level and at community level. We have to make sure that this common purpose is achieved. And if we can achieve a common purpose between our the communities and our municipalities, and everybody pools resources, time and energy and ideation and co-creates the solutions, I think, Andre, that we can achieve what you hope we can achieve in terms of moral regeneration and many of the other ills that we face in our communities at the moment. But in essence, we must, to start the process, we must start building relationships, as Marlene said. Once we build relationships, and that can happen by starting to talk to your neighbor, starting to form street committees, starting to participate more effectively in ward committees. And yes, it may seem a futile exercise because the agency that you have as communities is not falling on the ears of a respondent government at the moment. But that will change. And if we believe the radical collaboration is really about broader collaboration and just community against the state or just the state or insular in any way, it's about the greater good of community. And collaboration and radical collaboration, in our view, is also not about protests. It's not about fighting against government. It's about co-creating the solutions that we desire. And so this requires the behavior change from both communities and from municipalities. But I think the outcomes or the impact of radical collaboration and the green shoots we're starting to see in municipalities that we are working is statements made in public, both from community and from municipalities. In the case of Makana, we're often hearing the senior executive talk about there's no more us and them. We're going to work together.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the Eastern Cape last week, there was an article written by the local civic coalition chairperson who challenged another journalist who had a biased report around Makana. And this is the type of ownership of local problems that we want to see, because that's where the solutions start emerging, when people own their local problems, both the problems in the municipality and the problems in community. Thanks.
All right, thank you very much for that. Definitely wish we had more time to deliberate on that. I'd like to take our last two participants who are going to pose questions. The first one is Joseph Mofe, and after Joseph, we're going to go to Mlilo. Joseph, over to you.
Thank you, Kaya. Mine is not necessarily a question, but then you should be looking at the role of active citizenry in communities. First and foremost, we have to look at the issue of collective bargaining, whereby participants or community people would participate in their policies or maybe in their activities around the community, be it like your ward committee meetings, be it in the CPF, be it wherever like there is a program of the community, whereby the ward councillors will start to match that thing from a ward level going up to the municipality level, saying that this is the voice of where I'm from and then this is what we say. And then also when attending the municipal IDPs, thereby people will go and give their own inputs, including the business sector of those communities. They would say this is what we need and this is what we're trying to achieve. Look at the assets that they have in the community and then merge it on a broader scale with the next ward or the next community that there is, up to a level where it's a building block to go to the municipal level. The moral regeneration, we'll also look at how to do a sustainable moral regeneration into communities. We start by the young ones to teach them morals, to reactivate the morals that we had as older people back to the young ones, so that it could go upstream, going up back to the, whereby we could also rebuild the trust that we have with politicians included, with the civil societies included, and also with the business sector, engage in so many facilities and so many aspects of whereby the communities are affected, and then we create a moral regenerated community. And then by that essence, I think it will stop the things when there's a protest, there'll be looting, there'll be harming of people, xenophobic attacks, and so forth.
Thank you very much, Joseph. We're fast running out of time, so I'm going to have to cut this short there. Mlilo, you get the last word on this one. Over to you.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. You know, I wanted to throw in a question in there. I wanted to ask, like, how do we effectively address, like, the psychological impact, you know, of the period that South Africa comes from, especially considering the fact that that oppressive system has mutated and sustained itself, you know, through individualism, you know, private property, you know, and that sometimes hinders, you know, or it acts as a stumbling block, you know, against collective action, you know, which I believe is very crucial in building like an atmosphere that allows active citizenship. You know, like, so how do we go about that?
All right. So now, thank you very much for that, Mlilo. We also have one question that has been, well, a comment that has been posed on our Twitter timeline that says one of the challenges at the moment is that citizens are brought in at the end of public participation in IDP and budget processes. This defies the concept of public participation itself. And that's a comment from Zolani Zonyane. Zogiso, I'm going to start with you at this particular point in time. And I think just in addition to Zolani's point, the question of accessibility of this particular report, because I don't think I've ever seen one written in my home language. And if the case is that even if they exist, they are inaccessible in terms of the language dimension and also the technical dimension, well, does it matter that the IDPs are made available to citizens who cannot engage with them?
Sure. The question on the, you know, the psychological impact, I think actually probably deserves an entire session on its own. I think it's a brilliant one and really important for many reasons, but I won't go into it now, but just to really pinpoint that I think it is worthy of a conversation and an important one. On the accessibility question, I can't emphasize how relevant that is. Literally today, and as I mentioned in our earlier town hall, someone raised the point of, you know, accessibility, not just of the documents, but also and she used the term legalese, you know, so the, you know, our, the, our audience, or like the town hall members in today's case, were Xhosa speaking and Afrikaans speaking. And so that, on the one hand, you know, it's either English and Afrikaans that very often, you know, gazettes are published in. And that immediately is excludes a large number of people. So I think it is something that is needing of conversation, is needing of direct addressing, Kaya, especially in the context of the local government space. What we've, you know, tried to kind of really meaningfully do is to, as much as possible, simplify the understanding of the processes, but ultimately, yes, the real-time, ongoing, access to information question and the documents that are turned out, if I'm not able to engage with them, if it takes me forever just to understand the first page or a line of what's being gazetted, for instance, I think that is a massive barrier. And as we are, you know, in 2023, that is something quite concerning. And perhaps something in terms of active citizenship that we should all consider, both the organizations or the various organizations represented here, and all of us to say, right, the next time I get an IDP that or a document that I'm not able to engage with, I should say to the municipal manager, help out, make another plan, because 60% of us in this town speak Xhosa. So make it available in Xhosa. On the other hand, if it's, so I think there is also a space for that, you know, a sense of agency and really engaging in those ways directly. And for me, very often, this notion of local government being the hub of service delivery and also being the hub of engagement, it's actually, there's a lot more to it, and there's a lot more about that. And so to really end off this co-creation thing that Paul keeps mentioning, for me also means, you know, what are the ways in which we can identify common problems? Because you can imagine there are, and I think one thing we have not said in our call today, in our session today, is that there are definitely amazing champions within the system. They are really hardworking. There are some very hardworking municipal officials, councillors, who we can identify and who we can say, right, we want to work with you in these ways. And these are the things that we can identify as common challenges. And we say, right, let's bring the university in and better understand how can we translate documents in meaningful ways on an ongoing process as a pilot, as a, you know. And so I think there's a lot there around the co-creation and co-production that goes beyond what we know at present, and the thinking outside the box that I think is beginning to happen in Makanda. It really is. And there's, you know, on the one hand, there's great anger, there's frustration, rightly so. We should be angry. We should be upset. We should be taking to the streets. But on the other hand, there's really amazing work that's happening to say, right, what is it that we can do? And I think these are some examples.
All right. Now, thank you very much for that, Zuge. So, your time is definitely not on our side. I'd like to put on the last word to you, Marlene, and then finally, Paul, just reflect on some of the questions and also maybe just your final parting shot in this conversation. Marlene first.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with Zuge. There's such passion and commitment. A lot of the municipal officials come from those communities, grew up today. We were in one of the municipalities and really dreaming of how things can change and their commitment to do the work. And also re-engagement with communities is happening. We all are at a point where something's got to give and we need to get up. And I get the question around how do I get involved, but you also have to ask yourself, how do I get off my seat and move and show up, not only for myself and for others. So we need to figure that out. And what is it that we can do ourselves to move this forward and own our country and what's happening and how we see it as this place that we really want to live in and is part of and belong to. Thanks.
Thanks, Marlene. Final word from you, Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Kaya. It is very difficult. This is a behavior change problem, and what we're trying to shift people from being egocentric to system-centric. And I think what I urge people to do is take back your voice as communities. This is a very difficult process, but get involved. Start small. It's going to be a tough battle, but you can either make that your excuse or your reason. But I think the outcome we're looking for is worth the pain. But I think, as Zuki said, both in our municipalities and in our communities, There are significant champions there that are just waiting to be activated. And let's find those champions and let's drive behind them to achieve the type of futures we all desire. We all deserve more, but it's not going to happen unless we take up the baton and take ownership of the local problems and stop standing on the other side of the fence and throwing stones. So either be part of the solution or be part of the problem. That's your choice, and I urge you to be part of the solution. Thanks, Kaya.
All right, thank you very much.
I think that definitely
is part of the solution. It's something that resonates not only with all of us on this particular space, but also with a lot of citizens, particularly in the month where we celebrate the icon of active citizenship in the form of Nelson Mandela. Thank you very much for joining us today. We will have another follow-up session in a week's time around the same time. Please keep an eye out on our Twitter timeline where we're going to give you information and insights onto what we'll be covering next week on the 27th. On that note, thank you very much and have a wonderful evening.